B-Pod Studios.
This is WWE Superstar Roman Reigns, and you are listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with James Stewart and Mike Riley, two great members of the Kowloon crew. Mike, remember, this is Jay Stu's yard, brother.
This week's Wrestling Inside the Ropes is brought to you by WWE 2K Battlegrounds, featuring over 70 WWE superstars and legends. WWE 2K Battlegrounds is an all-new, over-the-top, multiplayer arcade experience featuring interactive environments and devastating power-ups. Now available at WWE2KBattlegrounds.com, and that's Battlegrounds with an S. Clash of Champions, Mike Riley is in the books. A good show, I would say. I was hoping for a little bit more competitiveness out of Jey Uso, but the story is clearly that Roman Reigns is the dominant tribal member. I think that is that is what he was going for there. He made this issue with the Usos personal. He wins over Jey Uso by a towel throw-in by Jimmy Uso. And it's Roman, and the story continues to be it's Roman and his ego trying to make sure that everybody knows this is his belt, this is his yard, and he's going to do whatever it takes to retain that belt and keep his dominant finger on over the WWE. Mike, what'd you think?
Yeah, this was great storytelling all around, and it was the perfect scenario without a crowd to have all of that storytelling there in a pay-per-view setting, where I think you'd have a lot of that storytelling on a SmackDown where Roman Reigns and the Usos are, and you had that capability without the crowd right there for everyone to actually hear it and understand, whereas if you're in the crowd, you're not going to hear that. So everyone can hear it, no problem, full impact right there. Really good to do this on a scenario. And I think this, you know, for the hints that we've gotten and indications of a Roman Reigns Rock match at WrestleMania, I think this lays down the foundation for The Rock and Roman Reigns to go at it at WrestleMania. The Rock has said he'd love to put Roman over too in social media the last couple of weeks, but now with Roman claiming he is the tribal chief, and of course The Rock and, you know, his grandfather, the high chief, Peter Maivia, and his dad, Rocky Johnson, the history there. This is great storytelling, and it sets up a match in my mind for those two at WrestleMania, definitely. And we got a few months away, so we'll see if they have a crowd or not. But it definitely makes perfect sense.
We, as the internet fan, as the fans are always trying to think of dream matches. So The Rock versus Roman is a match that we've had in our mind because it makes so much sense.
Yep.
But for The Rock to train for it, and he has to put his Hollywood career on pause, and he has to hope that he doesn't get injured, or they have to do like a really quick match where Roman just dominates The Rock, because Roman goes over, right? Roman wins.
I'd imagine.
We're not having The Rock. Here's why I say this, Mike, is because Rock Cena, right? We're like, oh, this is dream match. It's a year in the making. They wasted WrestleMania Atlanta, the worst WrestleMania in history, at WrestleMania 27 to promote Rock versus Cena. And we got to Miami and The Rock won. But was that a good match? Or was it the idea of the match that was really the draw? And then you had it the second year in a row. And at the time, and we're under different circumstances, that was the highest drawing revenue-based WrestleMania. You know, there's inflation and all these other factors. But Cena Rock 2 was a draw. But were those good matches at all? Or were they just long, like, okay, let's get to the end. The Rock surprisingly won once in a lifetime, and then Cena won twice in a lifetime. So now we're at Roman versus The Rock, and Roman's main event WrestleMania history is a little spotty. So Triple H at 32. I would say the Lesnar one at 31 was good. I would say the Lesnar one at 34 was good. But you've got The Undertaker, and it's not Roman's fault that The Undertaker was terrible and not prepared and should have said no. So now you're going to put Roman in there with The Rock, who hasn't wrestled a match technically since Dallas, since WrestleMania 32 in Dallas, but a longer form match since what, 29? WrestleMania 29?
Right. And now here's the thing, though, to your point with The Rock's not having a good WrestleMania match there, 28, he was in the main event there. He interfered with Cena. But 29, he gets at
27
Cena there.
Was the interference, 28 was Miami.
Interfere. Yes, okay, yeah. Thank you. 27
and then 29 was New York.
Okay, 28 he wins. And that was after the Hell in a Cell, one of the greatest WrestleMania matches of all time, featuring The Undertaker. And then, of course, 29, where you also had an unbelievable match with The Undertaker. So another tough match to follow on that right there with Taker going up against CM Punk. Another great match right there. So two tough placements for The Rock. Don't get me wrong that he's not in the, you know, I'm not saying he's not in shape, but it is, he has a liability for him for insurance and so forth. But if you're not going to put a title on the line, if there is no title on Roman Reigns, which I totally could see that being here, if you're going to have the draw of The Rock there, get the guy, get the Usos involved, because they are now a part of this story here. From what I saw at Night at Clash of Champions here, Roman Reigns and the Usos have a serious issue. Jimmy Uso had to save his brother. He played the role of Martha Hart. He played the role of Arnie Scolland. He is the modern day Martha Hart. Martha Hart and Arnie Scolland.
Played the role of MJF, played the role of Taz.
Sure, fine. Throw in the towel. Mm.
Where'd they get that finish from? They don't watch AEW. They do watch AEW.
It works. I loved it. I thought it was great storytelling. If you're going to have The Rock there, you can easily have the Usos involved where he does not have to do most of the work too. So get them in there somehow. Make it happen. Rock, Roman, Usos interfere. No interference, no DQ. Bring it.
So you want The Rock to beat Roman Reigns?
Yeah, if there's no title on the line, I have no issue with that. No issue with that.
Oh, and no, Roman's got a stranglehold on this belt for a while.
We'll see.
I got news for you.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, I think Roman has this title until further notice. And when I say further notice, I mean like a year.
We'll see.
I mean, like a long, long time.
Well, I mean, so that's the other thing, too. If you are going to have The Rock and Roman Reigns, with Roman having the title on him, he doesn't have to, The Rock doesn't have to take the title off him. I mean, you could have the title on the line. It could be a DQ. Get the Usos in there.
DQ at WrestleMania.
So what? It's The Rock
isn't coming back for Survivor Series or the Rumble. He might come back for the Rumble to win the Rumble at 30, but there's no DQ there at WrestleMania for the title fight.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I could see it happening. I mean, just the fact that you have him there, a name to go up against, the storytelling, tribal chief, it makes perfect sense to me. I think they laid down the groundwork for this.
But I also think that we're anticipating a match that isn't likely to happen. And with all the internet speculation, I bet that they have Roman versus Goldberg scheduled for WrestleMania. I bet they have a match that is going to disappoint us. Remember, Kurt Angle's farewell match was Baron Corbin.
I know.
Remember, Cena was only fit to do a rap battle at a WrestleMania. Like, the plans, and don't get me wrong, the rap was tremendous, and Kurt Angle couldn't hang with anybody, so they gave the heat to Baron Corbin. So Vince McMahon was right. But generally speaking, we hype up better ideas, and this is, of course, in our own minds. We hype up better ideas than they actually can deliver. Remember, there was this CM Punk Steve Austin thing?
Oh, yeah.
And Vince that never got happened. Pissed at Punk and Austin and Heyman for starting the process of a match that can't happen. Remember, Brock Lesnar did this Steve Austin interview series and Steve Austin podcast. Yep. And there was a teaser, it's going to be Steve Austin versus Brock Lesnar. And Vince got upset because it's a match he never wanted to promote. And you probably can't promote.
No, you can't. You can't do that. But if it just, I can totally see everything here with Vince McMahon. If he is going to go that route there, I mean, yeah, you could have the Goldberg, you could have someone else. I'm trying to think who else would be a good, I mean, yeah, he's probably going to do something that pisses off and be like, oh God, we have to see this thing right here. We have to go through this match. And is this really going to be a draw? But unrealistically me, I should say, and wishful thinking me, from what I saw tonight, I totally could see The Rock there. To your point, Jimmy, I get it, but you could do it with the draw, even with The Rock going up against Roman in a non-title competition. If he does have the title, they would still have the draw right there. But I don't think that Rock would have an issue going to fight Roman Reigns, even if it were for the title, not for the title. I think that'd be totally in a perfect scenario for everyone all around. Great ratings. Perfect. Can't beat that.
See, Roman's focus right now is the champion, being the champion, being the guy. This is his yard, and it's working on
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
So many levels as far as Roman's character has great focus. And he's the champion. They are making the Universal Championship important. And that is just something that there are a lot of times where belts are props. I think that the Universal Championship and Roman and Heyman just putting such emphasis on it makes it a viable and important piece to the wrestling puzzle right now. As far as the match goes, Roman dominated the first half. Showed frustration that he couldn't put Jimmy Uso away. Jimmy Uso does the comeback. And the end, the trash talking was tremendous. The fact that Roman hits his spear that has beat so many people and didn't go for a pin because he was so obsessed with making sure that his cousin, his family, called him the tribal chief.
Yep.
And he refused. And he hits another spear, doesn't go for the pin, continues to mouth off, demanding Jimmy Uso, Jey Uso, acknowledge him as the tribal chief. Then Heyman is trying to show sympathy. And Roman's like, nope, it's got to be from him. And then Charles Robinson tries to step in to stop it. And Roman Reigns essentially bullied a referee, which is tremendous. He's like, oh, I'll get you fired. You'll be out of here. Like, that's part of the Roman Reigns ego. And Roman continued with the Brock Lesnar-like shots. And I think at one point he said, oh, don't worry about this. This is family business. I've been doing this to him for years. Right? So now Jey Uso is getting beat up, and Jimmy Uso comes out with the towel. He eventually throws the towel in, but there was this great family dynamic of the Uso brothers talking each other out of and into throwing in the towel. So Jimmy acknowledged that Roman was the tribal chief, and that seemed to satisfy everybody. And Paul Heyman placed Jay's lei around Roman's neck, posed with the title, and that's when we fade to black. It was tremendous. Oh, this was so good. This was such a great way to establish Roman's character, the family element. The match quality was eh, but it wasn't about the match quality. It was about, this is the Roman Reigns that we have been waiting for. This is the Roman Reigns with the character and the personality and the importance of the championship. This was just, I thought this was excellent work.
Yeah, no, it was. And definitely not that the Usos really needed to be put over, but he definitely put Jey Uso over in a good spot tonight. Had him in that main event caliber right there. And the Usos, to propel them even more, that was a perfect opportunity for them right there. excellent storytelling, like I said. And even just, you know, the camera right up there on Roman and Jay, and Roman saying, now look into the camera there and tell my nephews about all the punishment you're dealing with right now. WWE has done a good job here in the Thunderdome. And the fact that they were able to do that with the microphone right up in front of Roman and Jey Uso, with everyone watching at home right there, full attention, that was really good. A good spot here in a pay-per-view. I love the ending to this. And it really has that to-be-continued trade right there. It really does. You could very easily, I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but you could have the Usos in a handicap match against Roman Reigns at Hell in a Cell. There's so much opportunity there. I mean, you could have, you know, again, what I thought which could happen with The Rock, it's another possibility there. But it is a to-be-continued scenario here with Roman Reigns as the tribal chief. And Paul Heyman in your corner, too? What an equation.
I think Hell in a Cell is going to be Bray Wyatt, and here's why.
Okay.
And to be clear, I think Hell in a Cell for the Universal title is going to be Roman Reigns versus Bray Wyatt. Because watching SmackDown, Alexa Bliss, who is sort of in her trance,
yep,
is walking past Roman Reigns, and she is just eyeballing that Universal Championship. She is eyeballing Roman Reigns. So if she is indeed possessed by the Fiend in this instance, then that's what's coming next. And that is the small teaser. In the same way that throughout the championship reign of Bayley, Sasha Banks was just eyeballing Bayley's championship.
Mm-hmm.
There are these subtle little things, and this is Bruce Pritchard's fingerprints all over it. These subtle little details that when you look back, you'll be like, yup, that was the clue. This was the hint that this was going to happen. And so that's why I think, and Bray Wyatt's thing is Hell in a Cell anyway, so it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Except
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Busted a DQ last year.
No, it was a no contest, Mike. It was a no contest.
Oh, that was awful. That was
such We went 20 minutes just bitching about that finish. That was tremendous.
Oh, that was so bad. And that same referee tonight.
And by the way, that was the night that Seth Rollins was ruined as a good guy.
Yes, it killed him. Absolutely. That's 100%. The night I was out on Seth Rollins. Out.
Yes, and he's done some of his best work the last year.
Yeah,
as a villain, as the Monday Night Messiah. One thing that really did excite me was Randy Orton not winning the WWE Championship.
You know what excited me was that match. I liked that match a lot, but you didn't like him not winning. Okay, go ahead, fire away.
I mean, I don't know what to judge an ambulance match by.
Yeah.
But I wasn't horrifically offended like I was by that car thing that AEW did a few weeks ago.
Right.
McIntyre and Orton. it's funny because it was almost it was McIntyre retains. McIntyre punt kicks Orton, slams the door on the ambulance, gets the win. But this was. I kind of felt like McIntyre came across as kind of a chump because Randy Orton had most of that match, or at least it felt like he had most of that match, except for Big Show interfering, Christian interfering, Shawn Michaels super kick off a stage. It was like the ghost of Randy Orton Christmas past. There was an RKO false finish. And Drew McIntyre needed all of that to beat Randy Orton. And then if he loses to Randy Orton, that's a bad look.
Yeah.
So like I understood what they were trying to do, and Ric Flair drives the ambulance off to end the, you know, to end the segment, to end the championship match, really.
Yep.
So like they're closing all these stories except the Edge one, which is still looming. Mm-hmm. But my point is Drew McIntyre is supposed to be this dominant champion, like wins the Rumble, eliminates Brock Lesnar in the Rumble, wins WrestleMania beating Brock Lesnar. And then he's got Seth Rollins he beats Dolph Ziggler, and now he's beating Randy Orton. But he needed all that to beat Randy Orton in an ambulance match? Like, the guy's 6'9", he's been the champion, and he needed all of that to win over Randy Orton?
So, simple answer here. He needs all that to win over Randy Orton. Simple storytelling. What can he do to beat Randy Orton fair and square? Hell in a Cell, right? Wouldn't it make sense? Put them both in the Hell in the Cell where they're covered in there, no one can get in, right? I think that would be the easy segue here. If they're going to continue this, there were a lot of matches on this card that I thought were like, oh my God, I'm so sick of like the Street Profits and Andrade and, who was Angel Garza there. And then, even the other one of, we're getting Bayley and Sasha Banks now too, but still Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton, if they're going to continue it, Apollo Crews and Bobby Lashley, I'm so done with that rival. That's what I was thinking of the most. But right here though, if we're going to get Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre again, it makes perfect sense to do it Hell in a Cell, where to your point, Jimmy, if he needed all those guys to beat him, then Randy Orton's going to fire back. Well, you need all these legends to do it. How about you do it in Hell in a Cell? That's the perfect way to continue this here.
Ugh. I'm not interested in Randy Orton in a Hell in a Cell against McIntyre. Like,
it's lazy.
You're probably right as far as where they're going next. Hmm. And I think the point is for this McIntyre run is put him in there with great workers. So it's Seth Rollins, it's Dolph Ziggler, it's Randy Orton.
Yeah.
And let him kind of grow into being the WWE champion. Yeah. Even though Drew McIntyre is a really good worker on his own, but you're right, putting him in there with veterans who know their way around the ring.
These are some of the well-established guys. Yeah.
But I just don't want to see Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre again.
Why though? You're out on Randy Orton, huh? See, I'm okay with that. I'm all right with it. I think Randy Orton.
And by the way, Randy Orton has done some of his best work this year.
Yeah,
the feud with Edge.
Right.
The feud here.
Except the WrestleMania match.
Motivated. He's been very motivated here.
Yep.
I feel like we're outliers on that WrestleMania match, but I'm not wrong. But I feel like the majority opinion is that was a really good match.
It's too long. It's way too long.
No, Mike, I'm not arguing with you on this. I did not like that match at all. I thought their Backlash match was better.
Much better.
But throughout the industry, that match at WrestleMania is like loved.
It's the
whole Iron Man match at WrestleMania 12, which is just a terrible match.
Yeah.
Like just a terrible thing. And everybody's like, oh, it's a thing of beauty. No, when they didn't score fall in the first 15 minutes, you knew it was going the distance.
Yeah.
So, and if you look, the fans there didn't like it because they started leaving.
Got too old. Yeah. It got way dragged.
Sidetracked for a second.
It just never happened. So that was a big thing for that right there too. But Randy Orton.
But then it's kind of like, okay, so who's McIntyre's next challenger?
Keith Lee.
As a good guy, you're already putting Keith Lee in the title fight with McIntyre. Like, there's no turn, there's no backstory. Or we just accelerate that tomorrow.
Let me take that back. I'd put Keith. I could see Keith Lee making the move to SmackDown in the draft. I could totally see that. Let me hold off on that comment.
But that doesn't like
no.
SmackDown to me feels like we're established stars. People know us, and Raw is the rebuilding show. With some veterans in the right spots.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, that's why I'm rescinding the Keith Lee comment there.
Thank you.
No, I'm serious. Yeah, he does need a well seasoned. Kevin Owens would make perfect sense. A Dolph Ziggler, something like that. But are they actually going? I mean, Kevin Owens, you could turn him heel. You could have him go up against.
I think Undisputed Era. And that's not going to be a Hell in a Cell match, but you rekindle the Adam Cole, Drew McIntyre.
Sure.
You bring people into, this is the backstory. Undisputed Era debuted the night that McIntyre won the NXT title. Mm. There's history there. There's a story to be told there. And that's how you progress. The problem is Adam Cole, I have socks taller than Adam Cole. Like he's just, he's
short.
He's tiny. And
he looks like a cruiserweight.
And that's the issue, right? Like, you put him in, you put Adam Cole and Daniel Bryan in the ring together, it looks right.
Yeah.
You put Adam Cole and Finn Balor in the ring together, it looks right.
Right.
Cole and Drew McIntyre doesn't look right.
It's David versus Goliath.
And that's the Vince McMahon thing. Like, I don't care size, whatever. I thought Taz was a killer in ECW.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His size didn't matter because he wrestled bigger and he was interesting and he was great promo. And you emotionally believed in him because you thought that Taz was like the baddest MF-er on the planet.
Yeah. And that was also a different kind of, obviously a different era, but ECW, of course, with the whole, you know, their violence and everything, the hardcore stuff. Taz, a badass. He fit that persona there in the ECW guys. Adam Cole, he doesn't look like a badass. He looks like
a snarky heel who has these great matches, but has this group behind him to help make sure he wins the match.
Yeah, and
he's leading a variation of the Horsemen.
Yeah.
He's leading a variation of Evolution. He's leading a variation of a supergroup.
Right. If you look at the guy for the first time, not knowing anything about him, it's like, oh, damn, I could steal this guy's lunch no problem without him even looking. He's a little wimp. You know, that's how small this guy is. He doesn't have that tough guy persona either, not knowing anything about him, though. It doesn't fit that guy. Him versus McIntyre, that would be a total McIntyre whoop-ass, if you ask me. So,
but it wouldn't be because Adam Cole would cheat and Adam Cole would do this, that, and the other thing, and he would make
looking at him face to face.
No. This is the Vince McMahon thing. Is you look at it and it doesn't look right to Vince.
Yeah.
Right. Even though, like, wrestling fans are smart enough to know that Adam Cole's talented or Adam Cole isn't talented.
Right.
Drew McIntyre is talented or not talented, and then you build the anticipation for the match.
Right. Right.
And that's where I'm going with this, is there has to be some build of anticipation. And if you put that little backstory, you let them cut promos on each other, you have Adam Cole cheat his ass off, like Bret Hart and Diesel, right? That doesn't look right. But the match that they had at Survivor Series 1995, was a competitive match because Bret's smart enough to know how to work a bigger guy.
Right. Right.
And so that's the type of psychology. Look at what Adam Cole just did with Pat McAfee.
Oh, it was unbelievable. Great match. Great match. Now, the other thing, too, just thinking out loud, you know, I know he's not Adam Cole's size, but he's definitely a little bigger. You could have, well, I don't know. He's been pretty open with the SmackDown. But AJ Styles, you could move him to Raw and have him go up against Drew McIntyre. That would make sense.
And it would get Paul Heyman and AJ Styles away from each other again.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's another possibility right there, too. Just thinking out loud, because the draft is announced and it's coming up in 2 weeks. So here we go.
Yep. They announced the draft October 9th on SmackDown and then the 12th on Raw.
Yep.
Two-night affair. Big Show did a run-in during the Randy Orton McIntyre match. Does anybody care about Big Show?
I forgot he was still around. I mean, I love the Big Show, don't get me wrong, but I forgot he was like still on the main roster. I thought he was on... is he Raw or SmackDown?
Yeah, nobody knows. And
yeah.
I mean,
we had him the night after WrestleMania. That was it.
Yeah, Big Show. Yeah, neat.
I love him, but yeah.
It's one like, of the okay. biggest, one of the, I don't know that he would admit this, but there's a feeling that he's one of the bigger wastes of talent, and that's a little strong.
Wow.
But that's a career that's been misguided. For the fact that he debuted in 95,
right.
won the world title his first night over Hogan, and he wasn't even considered on our list, and he's been there for 80% of since 1990, right?
Yeah, it's a great point.
And we're not talking about Big Show, as he wasn't an honorable mention of you, right?
No.
Nope.
I mean, he's been... Yeah, it's like a great supporting cast guy in my book, but he's not on
but
that.
But he's the modern day Andre, right?
Well,
Andre
size,
doesn't go down as one of the greatest of all time, even though he was one of the great attractions of all time.
Right. For some people, and some people are like, oh, Andre's on my Mount Rushmore. I mean, that's their choice, but he doesn't make my cut of Mount Rushmore. No.
Andre is one of the great attractions of all time. Is the Big Show that? No, he isn't. The Big Show has been miscast so many different times, and he's a talented performer, But the fact, would you put him in your top 20 since 1990?
Probably not. He'll be outside the 20, but I don't think he'd make the 20. I think there's a lot of
other guys. So that's an underachievement for a career.
Yeah, I'd say so. Or just bad booking, like you said. Because when he first, you know, the WCW, he gets the World Heavyweight title against Hogan in 95. He gets the WWE and goes Hollywood and Waterboy, right, with Adam Sandler. And then, of course, he's on – he gets a run, a little run there with the title. Not too long, but he beats he defended against the Big Boss Man. Who was it, The Rock? Did he beat The Rock at the Survivor Series?
No, Steve Austin gets hurt. He gets added to a triple threat match that was supposed to be Austin, Rock, and Triple H. Triple H is the champion.
Yeah.
Austin gets eliminated from the equation. He goes away for neck surgery.
There it is.
Big Show is the surprise entrant, the surprise third man.
Yep.
He wins the title. He has that program with Boss Man. They being WWE realizes it's a failure. They get it back on Hunter. Hunter has the program with Mick Foley, which leads into WrestleMania 2000,
right,
where the Big Show is part of that main event, but he is the first one eliminated from that main event. And then I think shortly thereafter, he's dressing up as Hulk Hogan, facing Kurt Angle. He's doing all this goofy comedy stuff.
Yeah.
And then fast forward, he's the one who beats Brock Lesnar for the first time.
Yeah. Yep.
Exactly. That's where Paul Heyman does the switch. And that was kind of a meh run as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And then they try to make him the face of ECW, which was a failure.
Yep. Disaster. Right?
And then he's in the ring. And my timeline is off here, but he's in the ring with Undertaker with that boring promo about being in the desert that Jericho interrupts.
Right. And then,
other stuff with Big Show that we kind of remember.
And then Daniel Bryan cashed in on him. Remember Dana Bryan cashed in on him at the...
Daniel Bryan cashed in on him.
Yeah, for the Money in the Bank. So yeah, just stuff like that. It's like...
For a while, Big Show's signature WrestleMania moment was beating Cody for the Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania 28. Right,
and then he tried like hell to win that Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Did not win the first one. Instead, it's Cesaro. He did get it the year after, I think, or two
he got
years?
The one in San Francisco.
Okay, so there you go. So
Cesaro won in 30 by slamming Big Show over the top rope.
Yeah, and that would have been like Big Show's highlight there. So, you know, that's like his modern day. That's his
your
real
highlight for WrestleMania over that long a career is. Yeah. Winning a battle royal.
I mean, you know what? If that's what he wants and if he's going to own up to it like that, looking at Andre as his idol, all the power to you. God love you. But otherwise, though, he has been underutilized and definitely bad booking in the end. The best way to, I guess, really define his whole career. He's not in my top 20, though. Long answer short.
I have to tell you, somebody who I'm looking forward to being highlighted over the next weeks and months.
Yeah, who's that?
Sami Zayn.
Oh, yeah.
Sami Zayn's win of the Intercontinental Championship or the retention of the Intercontinental Championship in this three-way ladder match, which opened the show Clash of Champions. He beats Jeff Hardy and AJ Styles. I thought this ladder match was great.
Yep.
I thought that Sami Zayn using handcuffs to win this match was so simple and so brilliant. Did you cringe when Sammy with put the handcuff in Jeff Hardy's earlobe?
Hated it. I couldn't watch. I had to turn for a minute. I'm like, you know, because we saw that with Jeff Hardy and Randy Orton, right? With the earlobe.
Yep.
Terrible. Oh.
Except Randy Orton put a screwdriver in there and started twisting the earlobe.
Oh, gross. Terrible. I hated it. Couldn't do it.
But the fact that Sami Zayn handcuffed Jeff Hardy to a ladder outside the ring through his ear neutralizes Jeff Hardy.
Yeah.
He tries to handcuff AJ Styles to the ring rope, and instead they handcuff each other, and then eventually Sammy gets the key, which was in his mouth, unhandcuffs himself to AJ, handcuffs AJ to the ladder, and then Sammy climbs up, pulls down both titles. I thought that was tremendous. And they did some dangerous spots. You know, Jeff Hardy does his WrestleMania Orlando awesome. His WrestleMania signature ladder match spot where it's off the 20-foot ladder through another ladder. And somewhere Sheamus is still rolling off the second ladder that didn't break.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a wonderful ladder match. Dangerous, hard-hitting, like, good stuff. I didn't like that Jeff Hardy took this weird tumble outside the ring. And it just, it looked a lot safer. Mm-hmm. Even though there were a few miscommunications and a few tumbles that looked really dangerous. Like, I thought when Sami Zayn blocked the ladder that he broke his hand.
Yep.
When he fell off, and there was some of that stuff. But overall, I did really like this match, even though the piped in fake "this is awesome" chant kind of,
yep.
You know,
a lot of that.
I didn't love that, even though it was a really awesome match.
Yeah, I actually did like the "this is awesome" because it kind of, for WWE to do that, they're probably encouraging people more to sign up for the Thunderdome and actually think that their voices can be heard. So I like that. I think that was a cool little thing what they did. But Sami Zayn, I was a little surprised about this, though, Jimmy, because here he is the other night on SmackDown. These three guys fight on SmackDown, which I really did not like. And I know it was the final tune-up. It was a weird go-home show, but they all fought each other, and Zayn won on Friday. So I thought that would have given him, like, oh, damn, you know, there's no chance he's going to win this one on Sunday. And he did it, you know. So to his credit right here, Sami Zayn, great heel move, great storytelling, similar to the, you know, Roman Reigns beating up, not as a little, some parallels there, but just a dirty tactic, way for him to really proclaim himself and define himself as the real Intercontinental Champion. You're going to see Sami Zayn have a good little run here with the IC title. And for him to proclaim himself as the champion that never did lose it for that time period there, I think that's going to be great here on out. And my God, you mentioned Jeff Hardy jumping off the top of the ladder there. Still got it. That's incredible to do that right there, 20 feet off the ladder, like making that sacrifice. Pretty amazing. So one of the great performers I've ever seen in my lifetime, the Hardy Boys, Jeff Hardy being one half of them right there. And that was just unbelievable to see him do it at his age right here.
And I think it's interesting to note that WWE, we all thought, well, Roman's going to get punished. Or I didn't think Roman was going to get punished for going home during the pandemic. I thought for sure Sami Zayn was going to get punished. And to WWE's credit, at least in this case, and in the case of Daniel Bryan years ago refusing to go to Saudi Arabia, Daniel ultimately won the WWE championship and went on an eco-friendly run with it. But to their credit, they at least in those cases have not held a performer going home against them. So they deserve credit for that. I'm sure there are examples that I hopefully somebody will bring up where they have punished somebody for it. But I remember specifically thinking, well, they're not going to punish Roman. They're going to punish Sami Zayn. I remember clear as day saying, well, Daniel Bryan's not going to Saudi Arabia. Good luck to him in his future endeavors.
Mm-hmm.
And what do they do a week later? They give him the WWE championship off AJ Styles. Right. So, you know, another jackass comment by me. but good for them for putting the title back on Sami Zayn, or, you know, having him retain it, depending on your perspective of the story, because Sami Zayn's promos have been tremendous since he turned villain.
Yeah.
And it also leads me to think that they're going to flip the US and the IC titles during the draft again, because Sami should be, they should rekindle the Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens fight.
Mm-hmm.
Because they need something for Kevin Owens, because Kevin Owens needs
something.
Like, he's just too good to not be on a show, in the same way that, like, Alexa Bliss, who has been one of the more interesting characters on SmackDown, should have been on this show.
Yep.
Bray Wyatt, how do you not have a pay-per-view without Bray Wyatt?
Yep.
But you have to have it important. And is Clash of Champions one of their most important shows? It's not, which is why I think, you know, there wasn't a great objection to them switching around. And, you know, Nikki Cross, we think it's COVID, but I don't want to say
that. Yeah, that was a last minute scratch there.
I think the women's tag titles was a timing of the show thing.
Yeah.
More than it was something else. But if Nikki Cross's husband is a member of the NXT roster, they supposedly had a COVID outbreak.
Yeah.
It's the word. I don't know that to be true, but that's what the internet believes.
Yeah. And we'll find out more in the next few days.
Yeah, we'll find out, or you know, somebody will make it up or whatever. and then we'll kind of go from there. But
right.
They put Asuka in that spot, which was the safe way to go, because there's at least a built-in story of Asuka and Bayley having an issue, and yep. It ends in a DQ, so there's no harm, no foul there. And then the return of Sasha Banks,
right,
which right. leads to Sasha and Bayley Hell in a Cell. It yep. has to, because yep. that's the next show. That's the match that they haven't done. And I still wonder, is this Sasha Banks finally winning a Hell in a Cell against a former member of the Four Horsewomen?
You know, and I was determined that going into this match here that it was going to be Nikki Cross. I picked her to beat Bayley and win the title, but of course that got scratched there. So yeah, I think it makes sense now that it will be Sasha and Bayley. I thought it was going to be a non-title match, and I'd be okay with that. So if Sasha is to go in there and finally beat Bayley, I don't think that's the right move, Jimmy. I think that
why Bayley should retain.
I think you need to continue this feud. It's too important to have, like, Sasha, here she is. Bayley turns on her, and she is the heel. She's a total badass on her. Turns in your best friend. Sasha needs to make that chase. She needs to go after her former best friend, her former tag team partner, and I think it would be best for business if Bayley retains the SmackDown Women's title at Hell in a Cell and continue this feud on. Now, Survivor Series, you could go a one-on-one match, or you could go a tag team match or something. But you have the TLC one in December, and if still nothing there, ride it right into WrestleMania. Keep it going. I want this feud to go all the way to WrestleMania. Bayley needs to, as much as I don't want her to win, Bayley needs to retain. And it's the fan in me that wants Sasha Banks to win this, because I'm all in on Team Sasha Banks, baby, the boss.
You realize that I think Hell in a Cell is going to be, Bayley's going to be over 500 days as SmackDown Women's Champion.
Yeah, we talked about that because it was the Money in the Bank, May 19th. Okay.
So May 19th, the criminal injustice done against Charlotte Flair.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
But the point is that she would have a 493 day reign had it not been for the interruption on October 6th by Charlotte Flair, because Charlotte was going to be the face of SmackDown, and then they changed their mind and Andrade, and they had to put Charlotte on Raw and all this other
right
nonsensical stuff.
Yeah.
But if the idea, but this Bayley Sasha story has been going, if you're not including the NXT stuff, which you should, mm-hmm. but it's been going since before WrestleMania in New Orleans.
Right.
So at some point they've actually got to have a Raw SmackDown quote main roster match.
Yeah. But
if they've been doing all these teasing things, like they're backed into a corner because they have a pay-per-view with a whole bunch of gimmicks around it. Right.
Right.
So they're backed into a corner where it's a Hell in a Cell, right? That's mm-hmm. the gimmick pay-per-view. So is the story, as far as their match sequence, worthy of Hell in a Cell? No, but their story long term, including NXT, should be in Hell in a Cell at this point, because that's 4 years, 5 years, 6 years. Like, yeah, that's a long time of them telling this Bayley Sasha Banks story.
Well, yeah, and also Sasha can claim that she was in the first ever Women's Hell in a Cell match.
She's been in, this would be her third, and no, she's 0-2.
Right, but she was in she can claim that she was in the first here to build the story here.
I don't see what that has to do.
Well, just saying, she's got the experience. even though she's 0-2, Bayley can turn the raid on her. Yeah, you're 0-2, Sasha. Well, I was in the first ever Hell in a Cell, Bayley. I made the history. What have you done? And I'm going to make history, too, getting the women's title off
and
you.
And Bayley just says, well, you've lost twice, so it doesn't
exactly
mean anything.
Exactly. So there you go. Easy back and forth stuff like that. So, but I again, I think Bayley's going to put Sasha over her knee, give her a spank in the ass, and win the women's, retain the women's title here. It's got to keep this going. But
this story goes back 6 years.
I know.
So this is it. And
you think,
and
this is it? I think it can,
well,
keep going.
It's, yeah, I'm okay with it being a Hell in a Cell because this story has 6 years of it.
Yeah.
Now, does the WWE fan, what's left? Well, you know what? They only have 2 million viewers, so like we're down to the hardcores anyway, so they already know it. But if you're trying to introduce new people to it, which they should always be doing, JR, remind them that they're new. Remind the new fans who these people are. You're not doing it enough. You're not doing it enough. Remind the people who they are. That, of course, is from JR's book. He's talking about Vince McMahon being in his ear constantly
right.
for the debut of SmackDown, however many years ago. So, but with 6 years of backstory to this story, that you can do Hell in a Cell. But the problem is that that's not the blow off. It's going to continue on after Hell in a Cell.
Yeah, and I have no issue with that. That's what I want. I want that as a fan. And also, I think it's important for the fans, too, if they can get back into a arena physically to actually see this here. Fans as us deserve to see Bayley and Sasha. It's great to see them on TV, but my hard-earned money, I want to see them in the flesh go face-to-face. That's why this rival has to continue all the way to at least WrestleMania, at least. Well, just real quick, I just wrote this down. I thought of it real quick. After you mentioned the punishment of Sami Zayn potentially there after he left and the IC title, the only person I could really think of, but of course he did redeem himself, Triple H, 1996. You know, after he broke kayfabe with the Click, punished him there for that a little bit. That's the only one I could think of after for
they
a little
punished
bit.
Him for a year.
Yeah.
They gave the King of the Ring to Austin, then they gave it to Triple H.
That's the only one I could really think of for what, but then of course.
And then Triple H got Stephanie and.
Exactly.
Away we go. And by the way, that's another omission from our conversation.
Triple H. Thought about that too. People still talk about that top 10. Getting a lot of it this week.
Oh, it's tremendous. It's tremendous.
And great topic.
Yeah, it's easy because it's an opinion and everybody can have one. And
exactly.
You know, not everybody has the perfect opinion, which is why it's such an easy topic. It's such
awesome.
Good topic.
Yep.
Because your likes and my likes are different and this, that, and the other thing. So that's why. But Triple H, who has been active for a long period of time, doesn't get a mention by us.
Nope. I don't even know if it'd be.
That's a full conversation to have one of these days. Why does that happen?
Yeah.
Mike, did you have any other thoughts from Clash of Champions?
I mean, you know, it's just your classic kind of like B show. And like you said, you're trapped into that gimmick there. But overall, I thought it was a pretty good show. I thought they did a nice job.
I thought it was a really good show.
Yeah, did a nice job. So we're coming up on the back end of pay-per-views here for the year. So this is it. We're three more to go.
Yeah, and NXT is October 4th, I think.
Next Sunday.
Finn Balor versus Kyle O'Reilly. I'm looking forward to that one. That'll be a good one. Yep. Little note that kind of accidentally made it into my phone.
Yep.
They had 6 months of new main events for Killer Cross.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
That's
and then he got hurt, and they had to scramble to redo everything.
That's a shame.
6 months. 6 months of new main events. That's I like hearing that because that means somebody's thinking.
Oh yeah, no, and that's really disappointing with the shoulder injury. But hey, you know what? For a guy like Finn Balor to step in right there and to have someone you can trust, then you're in good hands.
That's why you have Finn Balor.
Yeah, that's not the worst thing, right?
That's why you have Finn Balor. I think actually the real big story of the week, and we're saving here as we wrap up, is the passing of Road Warrior Animal.
Yeah.
Part of the legendary Legion of Doom, the Road Warrior tag teams, Hawk and Animal, just resume of winning championships everywhere they went. And for me, I read about them in the magazines, and I first saw them in a program with the Skyscrapers. And then I saw them hit WWF. And I remember them coming to WWF and being like, why aren't they fighting Demolition? Why are they fighting the Nasty Boys for the tag team titles? Why aren't they fighting Demolition? And of course, Road Warriors helped the Hart Foundation to win the tag team titles over Demolition. And you find out, well, Axe has all these issues and he can't really go. And I guess when they did the Road Warrior Demolition story in WWF, it didn't really draw on the house shows. And that's what, in the same way that Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair didn't draw on the house shows, which I find interesting, but I also sometimes forget that WWE is a bigger audience than everybody else. And there are people who are just WWF fans. And those little details, just because I'm a hardcore and all in on everything, doesn't mean that everybody else is.
Right.
There's another detail that reminded me of this week. WWE did virtual meet and greets.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a video recap in promoting this weekend's virtual meet and greets of the last time that they did them, which was SummerSlam weekend. And on one of those videos, Seth Rollins is going through the story about how his soon-to-be wife, Becky Lynch, is pregnant. And the 12-year-old kid on the other side of the screen goes, wait a minute, Becky Lynch is your wife? And Seth Rollins is like, yeah, everybody kind of knows that. And this 12-year-old kid is like, wow, like his mind has just been blown. So he's obviously not on the internet.
Right.
So I bring that up in saying, like, when the Road Warriors got to WWF, I'm all excited because, oh, Demolition, the Hearts, like all these teams to work with.
Right.
And the Demolition story never really played out.
Yeah.
Because of all these other different reasons that I had no idea about until I got to a much older age.
Right.
So there's a term in wrestling called the Road Warrior Pop.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when Iron Man hit, the crowd went nuts.
Yep.
And it was like nothing ever out there. Like, the best analogy I can make is when Mick Foley won the title.
Yep.
Austin's glass breaks.
A lot of spot
crowd ball, goes nuts.
Yep. You were there.
Rock with the chair. I was there with there. I have the ticket stub that sits above my desk.
Foley signed it, right?
Foley signed it. Yep. 100%.
Nice. Good.
So then Austin hits Rock with the chair. Foley pins Rock, wins the title. Place goes nuts again.
Mm-hmm.
That's the type of pop that the Road Warrior Pop was all about.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's funny you said that with, you know, talking about reading up on them before they went to the WWF back in the late 80s, early 90s. What, 1990 they went to WWF, I think? Is that what it was? Or 91, right around there. And, you know,
WrestleMania 7 was really their first match when they destroyed, I think it was either Power and Glory or the Orient Express in like 30 seconds.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, just right there, and what you just said, that was me right there. That was me not knowing anything about these guys before. I mean, that's like when I started my wrestling fandom there in 1990-91. I didn't know idea who the Road Warriors were. I knew nothing about AWA or WCW before all that. I was all WWF at the time, and to see these guys come out in these football pads with the spikes on and to have that persona, the mohawk on Animal, the two side mohawks on Hawk, just intriguing figures and just guys you don't want to screw with. There, real dominant athletes in the ring, so agile, both of them for their size, and just really the greatest tag team I've ever seen in my life. I think the most powerful, most dominant one people think of when you think of tag teams, professional wrestling tag teams, Road Warriors, Rock and Roll Express got to be in there, Hart Foundation, you name it, but Road Warriors are right there. They are 1-1A for a lot of people. And Animal and Hawk, you know, Jimmy, I know you mentioned the pop too. Being at WrestleMania 14 in Boston, they returned as the Legion of Doom 2000. Sure, it wasn't the same guys there, but that was one of the loudest pops I've ever heard in my life when you hear the, oh, what a rush. Place exploded. And then everyone chants LOD, LOD. Of course, with Sonny in there, a lot easier to look at too. But just amazing, you know, the background of them, and to finally see them return, really a special thing like that. They had that everything there, the intrigue, fans loved them, and just, again, I think they're right up in there in the conversation as the greatest wrestling tag team of all time.
I'm dumb, by the way. WrestleMania 7 was... The Hearts were the Hart Foundation walked into WrestleMania 7 as the tag team champions. They lost it to the Nasty Boys. And I'm like, oh, the Road Warriors helped the Hart Foundation win the tag team titles. So how could they, I'm a dumbass.
Well, who'd they fight? Were they even on the card at WrestleMania 7?
Yeah, the Hearts lost the titles to the Nasty Boys, and the Road Warriors beat Power and Glory, right? But the big debut was Wrestling Challenge July, whatever.
Okay.
But the pay-per-view was them helping, them being the Road Warriors, dumbass, helping the Hart Foundation beat Demolition, which went into the story with Demolition that never really went anywhere other than a Survivor Series match. Just, so much better than that.
Well, but you know, I'll tell you what, though. What about SummerSlam 92? Like, you remember that there. Who do they fight in that one?
Oh, they fought Money Inc.
Yeah, and just that entrance right there, the appeal, Paul Ellering coming out there, the motorcycles. That's just that really personified them there in the WWE. I guess that for the WWF character of them in that time frame there. Now go back and watch
Dark Side. The entrance was great. The actual in-ring product, there was a little bit of an issue there.
Well, they talked about that because Hawk like I said, Dark Side of the Ring this year, Animal really went into detail on that.
I remember them winning that match with the Power Slam. I'm like, that's weird.
Yeah, it didn't make sense. But that really...
And then you later find out what was going on. And
exactly. So some demons there to deal with, but Animal, just a real good guy. And actually, I had the time to spend some time with him at WrestleMania 36 weekend. You know, our good friend Andy Wong... We went out to dinner with him, Kevin Sullivan, and Shane Douglas the two nights before WrestleMania. And Animal was in that crew right there. And really nice guy. And this was just a couple of weeks after his son, James Laurinaitis, NFL linebacker, was released by the St. Louis Rams at the time, became a free agent, signed a three-year deal with the New Orleans Saints. And him knowing that we were from Boston, he was like, damn, I really wish that Belichick signed him. I would have loved to see him play with Brady and get a ring or two with him. So that was really cool to hear that. But real nice guy, easy to talk to. And you know what, Jimmy, you saw him at the WrestleCons too. He let everyone wear his shoulder pads and all that. I got to tell you, you look at these wrestling belts behind me, within the last couple of weeks, it is still my goal, but it's going to be a major regret now that my next project is to get one of the WWF tag team titles, like the original one, and have only tag team champions sign it. My only regret is that the Legion of Doom cannot sign that anymore. Road Warriors cannot sign it because they were the best.
Yeah. Good luck finding the WWF 1988.
I got people.
Oh, you got Conrad working on it?
Yeah, maybe. No comments.
You reached out to Conrad?
We talk.
Yeah, I know.
If you would like a link, let me know. I'll help you out too.
No, so I would want, if we're talking belts, right? And we'll wrap up with this.
Yeah.
If we're talking belts, I would want the Hart Foundation from that era.
Yep. Oh, you want them to sign it.
Yeah. I'm just talking out loud.
Yep.
Like I would want Tully and Arn.
100%.
On an NWA one.
Okay.
Which I actually held when I went to StarCast in Chicago, I actually held the belt that they held.
Okay.
Which is really cool. I would want that autographed. Midnight Express, I feel like I would want an NWA title from them. Mm-hmm. I would want an ECW Dudley Boys.
Mm-hmm. Even though your relationship with, we'll stop there. Never mind.
No, but like if we're doing the list of tag teams, right?
Yep.
Objectively speaking, the Dudley Boys are one.
Objectively?
Yeah. If I'm being objective and putting any type of personal feelings aside.
Yep.
The Dudley Boys have a strong case since 1990 that they are the number one tag team in the world.
Okay, fair enough. I wouldn't argue that. I'd also, Legion of Doom. I mean, again, that's where I put them right
up there. The Road Warriors, you're thinking 80s. Because what did the Road Warriors do from 1990 to 2000?
You can't. Yeah, that's. You know what? Again, I go back to my comment a couple of weeks ago too. New Day, you can't turn them away.
New Day is in the conversation, but 6 years, right?
Yeah, but
how long were the Dudley Boys on top?
No,
how long were the Dudley Boys ECW champions, WWF champions?
No, they're probably.
They did the tour
in
Japan. They did Impact.
It's tough to challenge. I'd also throw the Hardy Boys in there too.
Hardy Boys are definitely in the conversation.
I
have a bias towards the Steiner brothers.
Yeah.
I love the Steiner brothers.
Yep. See, I would have, to sign the titles, I'd have Dudley's, Hardy's, if I can get Edge and Christian to sign it. Money Inc., I'd want Ted DiBiase to sign it. You know, all those guys right there. Those are the tag teams I want to sign my WWF tag team title belt. But again, cannot have Legion of Doom do it.
AEW, the Young Bucks. Oh, wait, they're not the champions. That's right. They own the promotion and they're not the champions.
They won't put themselves over.
No, not yet, but we'll see.
Yes.
Cody's heel turn, I'm very interested in, but we're going to
bring
here.
It. Rest in peace, Animal. Rest in peace.
Yes.
60 years old. My God.
Ugh. Yeah.
This year is going to end, Jimmy. Done.
I know. Ugh. And the hope is that it's going to get better.
We'll see. Yes.
Each week you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcast. Talk to you later.
A tougher challenge for the varsity club. You see, Chicago today, tonight is like the OK Corral at high noon, Wyatt Earp and the rest of the gang, except that they use bullets. We don't. Tell them why, Animal.
Because dead men can't feel pain. Kevin Sullivan, I guarantee all the people out there, and especially in our hometown of Chicago, no matter what it takes, we will get you up. And when 16,000 people are cheering for us to rip your head off, we're going to do it. We're tired of you. Get in our face. We're going to get rid of you once and for all. Tell them, Paul.
You know, Bob, the cards are dealt. It's time to play out the hand. And the bottom line is, you got to go against this man, the Animal. You got to go against the Hawk. You're facing the best team in professional wrestling today. Let's go and take care of business the only way we know how, and that's to beat them up.
Well, you know, we've been underdogs all our life, and there's some critics out there that think we're underdogs tonight. Well, the people out there aren't stupid. They know better. The skyscraper. Hey, who builds buildings, Paul?
People do.
And who tears them down?
People do.
Well, we're a couple of people that are going to reduce them to rubble. Snack on danger, dine on death. Dead men don't make money. Tell them, Adam.
You know, a lot of people in our sport today judge themselves on how much they can take by the hands of the Road Warriors. Not by anybody else, but by the Legion of Doom. That's why we're the number one team in professional wrestling and skyscrapers. You ain't gonna change that.
We're not gonna come out here, Dana Crockett, and be classic champions. We'll issue a challenge to anybody to prove nobody can wrestle better than us and nobody fights better than us. Tell him, Hawk. David Crockett, I told you a long time ago when you quit going around and help everybody and go ahead and help yourself, you reap benefits. Well, we're reaping benefits. We got the NWA World Tag Team belts and we aims to keep them. Lex Luger, Sting, you got a problem with us? I'll jack your stinking jaws a city block, and I ain't kidding about nothing. Don't help anybody but yourself if you want to get somewhere in this world. Dusty Rhodes, you just better shut your mouth. and you just better keep your nose out of something that don't have none of your business in a town, Paul.
Well, David Crockett, the bottom line is we needed these belts because these belts represent a lot of money to the Legion of Doom. And the bottom line to any business, the bottom line to any business, whether it be IBM, GM, or the Legion of Doom, is money. And that's what we're interested in. It never was friendship. It never was friendship, Luger. It never was friendship, Sting and Dusty Rhodes. We used you just like we used everybody else to get the bottom line, and that's money.
You can never lose a friend that was never one to begin with.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.